All right, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Today, on December 29th, 2002, last Sunday of the year, and a beautiful day here in Urbana, Illinois. Today, we're going to be talking about the Bill of Rights, civil liberties, and the war on terrorism, the domestic side of the war. And joining us as our guest today from Philadelphia is David Lindorf. David Lindorf has been a freelance journalist for over 20 years. He's a founding member of the National Writers Union and a prolific writer. Lindorf's work regularly appears in The Nation, In These Times, Business Week, and Salon.com. In a recent investigative piece for Salon, which we'll be talking about today, he exposed the incredible story of Attorney General John Ashcroft's TIPS link, the TIPS program. They're linked to the television program on Fox called America's Most Wanted. Lindorf is also the author of the highly acclaimed book Killing Time, an investigation into the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. It's the book that examines the famous death penalty case of Mumia Abu-Jamal and uncovers fascinating new evidence about the trial. His work is essential reading for anyone who cares about civil liberties and social justice. Dave Lindorf, thank you for joining us today. Dave, you there? Let's see. We're still working on our connection with Dave, it looks like. Dave, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, great. Thank you for joining us very much.
Okay, got it working.
Well, that's great. Look, let's start with, if we can... Can you tell us a little bit about what is the TIPS program and what are some of the other, just a general overview for our listeners who might not be familiar, might have been following this very closely. What are some of, since 9/11, what are some of the core policies that have been put in place to battle terrorism on the home front? And then in the context of that, tell us a little bit about the TIPS program, if you would, please.
Well, you had a sort of a panicked response, or you know, if you wanted to take a cynical view, a lot of politicians wanting to look like they were doing something after 9/11, and so there was a lot of legislation that got passed very quickly, within weeks. The most significant of those was the USA Patriot Act, which was a huge bundle of measures that basically increased the powers of the Attorney General's office and the executive branch in general to get around a lot of restraints that had been placed on the police function of the government over the course of, I don't know, since the COINTELPRO scandals of the Nixon administration. So we went not only backwards, but into whole new areas of infringements on civil liberties that people have taken for granted with that act.
Can you give some examples of the sort of things this actually means tangibly?
Yeah, you had the ability now of the Attorney General to conduct wiretaps without warrants, you know, without going to a court to justify them. You have roaming wiretaps, which means that if some police agency wants to follow a suspect who they think has gone from wherever he or she might be living to somebody else's house, they can simply go and tap that house too. So if you have somebody visiting you who is a suspect, you'll find your phone tapped.
Wait, before you go on, let me ask, follow up on that. Does that mean that the Attorney General, like, if they just don't like you or me or one of our listeners, can do this, or do they have to like follow some protocol before they can do a wiretap?
Well, in theory, they have their own protocols, but there's no oversight of it anymore. It used to be that a judge had to monitor and determine the justifiability of a wiretap, and that's now it's just on the declaration of the Attorney General that it's needed.
Okay. Well, yeah, go on then.
You also have now the assertion by the government that they can hold American citizens without... without due process of a charge or without the right to see an attorney. We've got two American citizens now in that category. One is Jose Padilla, who is a born and bred American, grew up in Chicago. And we have another American by birth, grew up in Saudi Arabia, but was born in America. Both are being held or have been held for months, I think, in one case almost a year now, without being allowed to see an attorney, without being allowed to see family. They're just in solitary confinement with no charges against them. They're being called enemy combatants. A judge recently said that they would have to be allowed to see an attorney, but that's about all they've gotten.
We're talking to David Lindorf today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We're talking about the USA Patriot Act and the other measures of the federal government since 9/11 to battle terrorism in the home front and some of the implications of these acts, which have not been discussed a great deal, an issue we'll get to later, for domestic civil liberties and freedom. If you'd like to call in and have a question for Dave Lindorf, our number here at Media Matters is 333-9455. And also there's the toll-free number, 800-222-9455. Dave, as we get to this, look at this USA Patriot Act, it passed by an overwhelming vote, didn't it?
I think only one person voted against it, or two, maybe. It was, if I remember right, I know Wellstone voted against it.
And I think Feingold did as well.
Feingold may have also. There may have been two. It was pretty stunning.
So it was really done in the sort of emotional furor following 9/11. Is that a safe statement?
Yeah. I think that puts maybe a more favorable spin on it to the people who did it than they deserve, though. I mean, I think there's a lot of calculation that goes on in Congress about these kinds of things where they, you know, you've got people who maybe not are fearful. I'm sure some were, but I think some are coldly calculating that this is a great opportunity to do something they've wanted to do for a long time.
Yes, I understand it. And that following up on that, a lot of what comprised the U.S. Patriot Act, getting rid of habeas corpus, getting rid of getting approval for wiretaps, sort of giving the government blank check to do wiretaps, this wasn't something that was thought up after 9/11. This was stuff that had been on the drawing boards for years and years.
Absolutely.
And so this 9/11 became the context in which it became possible to push this through that would have been really difficult otherwise. Is that fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the people, for just to take the death penalty as an example, I mean, it was under President Clinton that the habeas corpus was gutted with regard to the death penalty. Habeas corpus, for listeners who don't know about it, it predates the U.S. It's an old English common law fundamental principle that says that you have a right to have your case reviewed, and habeas corpus in the U.S. context means that you have a right for a federal judge to review your case. And what they did with the death penalty is put incredible new constraints on that, so that, first of all, it can only be done once in the course of your entire appeal process. And then they put limits on that, too, and said that, you know, just for an example, in the case of the guy I've been writing about, Jamal, it's now held that if a state court finds something to be true, that a federal judge can't say that it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And that was never the case before.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly when you look at some states and their judges, and I would include my own here in Pennsylvania, just the most mendacious and mediocre judges are in the position to determine life and death for people and then not be reviewed by a federal judge in any significant way.
You know, you mentioned the COINTEL program from the 1960s and 70s earlier when you were talking mm-hmm. about the USA Patriot Act. That's sort of an important part of American history that a lot of people might not be familiar with. Could you just give a rundown on what that program refers to?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's really important for people to know, because that's the reason that they had to pass this U.S. Patriot Act is because there had been strictures placed on police authorities because of COINTELPRO, and with damn good reason. Richard Nixon, when he was president, created a whole vast network of outside of the outside of review, outside of any kind of other purview, collection of people, including elements within the FBI, the U.S., the Defense Department, and other police agencies, plus his own people that he called the plumbers, who were in extra-legal ways spying on organizations, everything from the National Organization of Women and the American Friends Service Committee, various church groups, and elements of the Democratic Party were being spied on, infiltrated, dossiers were being collected. The Defense Department alone had over 10,000 files on U.S. citizens, and the FBI had many, many, many more. There were disruptions, there were agents provocateur, just the kinds of things that you expect to be going on in banana republics in Latin America were rampant in the Nixon administration. And after he was had to resign from office, these things began to be investigated, and just the, I think the tip of the iceberg was really exposed, but it, what was exposed was so obnoxious to average Americans that Congress passed a series of laws, from the Freedom of Information Act that allows you to see your files to restrictions on the ability of the FBI to infiltrate domestic nonviolent organizations and all of those things. And those were there for the reason that all those things had happened. And now, on the excuse of 9/11, we've basically thrown out all of the restrictions that had been developed after the abuses of COINTELPRO, and we're right back where we were, only maybe worse.
In fact, to add a little more history to this, most of the important Bill of Rights decisions made by the U.S. Supreme Court, not just the First Amendment, but also the Fourth Amendment, protecting individual civil liberties, were made after the terror in World War I and following World War I, the Palmer raids against political dissidents.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a history, basically, of our government pursuing individuals for their political viewpoints, and then the courts and the political system ultimately responding with measures to prevent government harassment of individuals for their political viewpoints. And now in that sort of pendulum, we've swung back, it sounds like, to where we were under Palmer and Nixon, where the government has more carte blanche to do as it pleases. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it's gone in some ways farther than it's ever gone before. These things like arrest without charge and indefinite detention without charge and being unable to see a lawyer are new and are frighteningly reminiscent, I think, of dictatorships rather than a democracy that we're used to.
Now, the first question that comes to mind then, these were not radical Supreme Courts in the 1920s and 30s that protected civil liberties and a number of important free speech and Fourth Amendment decisions. Has any of these new laws like the USA Patriot Act come before the court system to test their constitutionality? And if they have, what's happened? If they haven't, what do you think the prospects are they'll be overturned?
They haven't gone to the Supreme Court. They've been tested at the federal court level and in some cases up to the appellate court level. Some of them are headed for the Supreme Court. I don't know. I mean, we have now we have a divided court, a 5-4 divided court of sort of mainstream. I don't think we have any what I would call, you know, there's no William Douglas's on the court or Earl Warren's on the court today, but there are some civil libertarians there. I'd say, you know, moderate to conservative, with, you know, 5 conservatives and 4 moderates.
Mm-hmm.
On most issues, and 2 that kind of waver between. And the problem is that I think we have a more political court than we've had in decades. This is a court that has clearly, where the majority has clearly taken decisions that benefit the Republican power elite that's in place now. We've seen it with how they, you know, maneuvered with the election of the president. We've seen it on several other issues. And so I don't know when push comes to shove with some of these things coming forward that they may act in a political way and not in a principled way. I'm not optimistic.
We're talking to David Lindorf. Dave Lindorf today is our guest on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Dave Lindorf is a freelance journalist, has been for over 20 years, written widely in a number of prominent national publications, and has done a number of pieces recently on civil liberties and what's going on in the domestic war on terrorism. That's what we're talking about today in Media Matters. If you'd like to call in and have a question for Dave Lindorf, the number here is 333-9455. Our toll-free number is 800-222-9455. Let's go to the phone lines right now. Line 1, Champaign County, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I When you were talking about the Nixon era, and it reminded me of a story that maybe you'll confirm because I can't remember where I read it, and then it leads into the character of the Supreme Court right now. I'd heard that Rehnquist was Solicitor General or something in the Nixon administration, and he actually wrote up a justification for Nixon to wiretap without any surveillance, and it was sort of harkening back to common law, the idea that just as habeas corpus comes down from English common law, that there was some sort of right of the head of state to I don't know. Anyway, if that's the case, and it might as well be, it's apocryphal, I guess, if it isn't really true. I'm not hopeful with what the Supreme Court's going to do. And the other thing related to that is this latest development of Ashcroft's Justice Department saying that this massive lawsuit that came out of the roundup in L.A. has to go directly to the Supreme Court because it's an INS ruling. But there have been other cases around secret proceedings and all that sort of stuff that have gone through district courts. In fact, we had interesting anomalies where one district had ruled that the secret proceedings couldn't just be ordered as a matter of course, which was a directive from Ashcroft. And actually, one detainee here got out because he was in the window of when that court that case was regnant, and then it's taken by the Supreme Court to be overturned. Where do they get off just saying that this jurisdiction has to go directly to the Supreme Court? I don't understand that. And thanks a lot.
Well, thank you very much for calling. Yeah, do you want to field those, Dave? Start maybe with Rehnquist.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but I do believe that it's possible for the Attorney General to request an expedited hearing before the Supreme Court on nationally important issues. So it's not required for the court to agree to do that, but I think they can request it.
Mm-hmm.
That may be the case. Just jumping out of turn here, there to respond to another part of what the caller said, it's true that on the detentions, on the secret hearings of immigrants cases, there's a split with, I forget which circuits they are, the fourth and the sixth or something, or third and the sixth, I think it's the third and the sixth, ruled on opposite directions on whether the government has the right to hold secret hearings on deportation issues. And so that obviously will have to go to the Supreme Court because it'll have to settle which of those two versions of judgments it wants to support. Not a betting man, I would still say that it probably will go with the Sixth Circuit, which held that secret detentions were secret court hearings were allowed for immigrants. And as far as Rehnquist goes, it's absolutely correct that he was a Nixon figure in the Attorney General's office. I think it was Solicitor General, but I wouldn't want to be held to that. And he did. He also has a book out, the name of which escapes me at the moment, which pretty much outlines his philosophy and is very scary.
All right.
What he considers to be the powers of government.
Chief Justice Rehnquist, that is?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, well, these are interesting times, to put it mildly. What would you say, Dave Lindorf, to the listener right now who's listening to this show, or the average person who says, look, I don't break any laws. I'm not a terrorist. I've got nothing to be afraid of. If the government needs to do this stuff to get rid of these bad guys who blow up buildings and kill innocent people, and that's what it's going to take in these tough times, you know, that's just the way the price to pay. I have nothing to worry about. This is probably a good thing. How would you respond to that sentiment?
That's a good question. Just let me anecdotally give you a few examples. I had a cartoonist working for me in a newspaper I was running out in L.A. He was an American kid of Hispanic origin. I think his father may have been from Mexico, but he didn't even speak Spanish. And he, in the time that he was working for me, a year in Los Angeles, this was back in the 70s, he was three times deported to Tijuana. And had to call his father to send him bus fare to get home because the INS would just snag him off the street and he didn't have ID. And so they would put him on a bus, a locked bus, and ship him down with a bunch of wetbacks, you know, to Mexico, and there he would be, you know, just a young kid without any money and had to be brought home. No apologies, no nothing. That's because you don't have any recourse when you're an immigrant, but what if you're not an immigrant and they say you're an immigrant? You really need a court hearing where you can argue these things, and you need an attorney and all of those things, but he didn't get those. He just got thrown across the border.
But that was going on before 9/11, right?
That's right. But I'm trying to illustrate why we need to have these protections. The INS has been a particularly horrible organization in terms of protecting civil liberties and rights for a long time, but here's an example of why we need to care how they treat immigrants, because some of us may be called immigrants when we aren't. People become citizens and speak with a funny accent, and if they don't have their papers on them, they may be called immigrants anyway. And that's not the only thing. I mean, Mr. Padilla may or may not be guilty of having planned to blow up a dirty bomb in Washington, but so far the evidence suggests that he's not guilty of having really planned anything, and he may have just been a big talker in Chicago, you know, where he was, you know, wanted to sound tough and was blowing his mouth off, and as a result, he spent almost a year in jail in solitary confinement without a lawyer. You know, people can get in trouble who may not be guilty as charged. And I guess the third reason I would give is that it's the worst among us that make the worst laws. You know, and it's like when we decide that because we as a society think somebody is scum and deserves to get the worst that society can do to them, that we bend those rules which the founding fathers saw were needed to protect us from tyranny, and we accept the at our peril, we accept the exceptions to those protections in the name of punishing the worst offenders or people we consider to be the worst offenders, and then those things end up getting used against us. So history is replete with societies that have become totalitarian because people have been willing to accept in the passions of the moment limitations on their freedom, and I think Germany under Hitler is the prime example.
We're talking to David Lindorf today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. If you'd like to call in, our number is 333-9455. Our toll-free number is 800-222-9455. 1 week from today, our guest on Media Matters will be David Barsamian, who's written a new book on public broadcasting and is conversant on a wide range of subjects dealing with media and politics. In forthcoming shows, we're scheduling people like Mark Cooper, the columnist or the writer, the correspondent for The Nation magazine, Tom Morello, the musician who's been active in a number of fronts, and several other people, including Jenny Toomey, another person active in the music industry. So you can stay tuned to the show to find out what we'll be doing. Another way you can keep on top of what we're doing on Media Matters is to go to my website, robertmcchesney.com, and click on the icon, and you can arrange to get a weekly email sent to you that will give you an update on the forthcoming guests, links to their articles and books, information about back guests. Also at my website, robertmcchesney.com, there will be an icon you can link to. We'll have all the previous programs on Media Matters. If you want to listen to any of the old shows, download them. They're sitting there ready for you. So just go to robertmcchesney.com and follow the icons, and you'll be able to get a weekly email concerning the program, and you'll be able to go to all the old shows. So please give us a call today if you want to talk to Dave Lindorf, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Dave, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that people should remember that Germany before Hitler was a democracy, and a pretty good one. I mean, it was a parliamentary democracy with a lot of freedoms and rights, and within a short period of a few years, those were all erased, and they were erased with the willing participation of the voters.
You know, one thing that comes to my mind as you talk about this, and always does with civil liberty issues and issues of government power over individuals, is that traditionally in the rhetoric of American politics, this has been an issue of great concern to what are called conservatives. They're concerned with the large federal government operating secretively to interfere with the operations of private individuals and citizens. And so this doesn't seem like, on the surface at least, the sort of issue that cuts left-right, liberal-conservative, that this should be or is an issue of equal or greater interest to many political conservatives to those in other political viewpoints. Has that been how this one is broken down? How's the response to these measures by the Attorney General and the Bush administration been dealt with across the political spectrum in the United States?
I would agree that it's not cutting across it's not the traditional divide that you might think it would be. We have Democrats like Clinton and Joe Lieberman, the vice presidential candidate who now is talking about running for president, who have been atrocious on civil liberties issues. Lieberman supported the TIPS program that we were going to talk about.
Yeah, we'll get to that next.
Lieberman was a supporter of that and has supported a lot of other limitations on civil liberties under the USA Patriot Act and so on, where on the other side of the fence, Congressman Barr, who played such a big role in the impeachment hearings, and Dick Armey, the retiring whip, a Republican whip of the House, who was an arch conservative. Both of them have decided to go to work for the ACLU after they leave Congress after this term, and are opponents of these measures because they're conservatives who recognize them as a major threat to American liberty.
And related to this is the question of the press coverage, the media coverage. You know, our media, by their own account, our press system is our feisty fourth estate that's supposed to keep government in line. And they're, especially because they are the beneficiaries of the freedom of press privileges in the First Amendment, more than almost any other institution, we expect them to be particularly tuned into threats to civil liberties. What sort of grade would you give the news media for their coverage of these issues over the past year and a half?
D year and a half.
Is that using a curve?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, why is that?
I'm talking about the main corporate media. That they have been absolutely horrible on this, and the reason is that I think there's two parts to it. One is simply the commercialization of news it's become so entertainment driven that issues like civil liberties are just seen as sleepers and, you know, eye glazing topics that they don't want to spend the time on, especially electronic media. But the print's been pretty dreadful too, and a lot of that I think is purely entertainment driven, and then you also have the more I think sinister aspect, which is that a lot of these outfits are so much in league with the government in terms of their own self-interest that they don't find themselves comfortable in the role of a fourth estate, you know, where you're really a permanent opposition to whoever's in authority.
If our listeners wanted to read more about this, aside from going to your work, Dave Lindorf, that's been posted in Salon.com and in These Times and in The Nation, where could readers go or listeners go to find stuff to learn more about this, more critical analysis of the USA Patriot Act and the TIPS program?
Well, fortunately, there's a lot of media out there. The problem is that you have to go looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't turn on your TV and expect to get, just click on news and get real news. You have to do some searching. You've got to, there are magazines. I write for some of them. Salon, I think, is quite good, and as is The Nation, In These Times, Mother Jones, The Progressive. There's a long, long list, Z Magazine. There's a long list of publications that address these things and websites that write about them. You can go to the ACLU website and get a lot of information. The web is wonderful. The only thing is you do have to have, exercise some of your critical faculties when you go to these alternative sources, because the standards vary widely. I think the magazines like the Progressive and the Nation and Harper's Magazines and everything, they pride themselves on being factually correct. They're opinionated, but they're factually correct. They have fact checkers. My work gets checked up the gazoo before they run it, and I have to prove what I'm saying. But a lot of websites, blogs, all these things are people writing what they think, and they're not always factually correct. So you have to, exercise a certain amount of.
So it sounds like you'd recommend off the top of your head that our listeners go to places like The Nation, The Progressive, Salon.com, and In These Times for starters.
Yeah, and NPR and BAI. There's a lot of on the radio. There's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can piece it together, and you can know what's happening. You also, fortunately, now that we have the web, we also have the ability to go outside of the U.S. to get news. Mm-hmm. I get a lot from going to the Guardian website in England, which is a great newspaper.
And what is that web address? Do you know offhand?
I think it's Guardian UK.
.uk.
Yeah, there's a UK in there. It's www.guardian.uk. UK dot.
Well, whatever. I think our listeners will have to use their skills.
You can find all these things by just doing a search on Yahoo.
That's right.
And clicking on it. So you don't need to know the websites.
We've got a bank of phone callers to talk to you, David Lindorf, and I think they'd probably rather hear you talk about that than try to drum up a web address. So let's go to the phone lines now. Line one, Champaign County, you're on, or Urbana, you're on with David Lindorf.
I had a comment and a question. The comment is that it's good to hear you mentioning Padilla and that kid that worked for you. I think there's really Latinos are considered like second-class citizens in this country, and nobody really speaks up for them, and it's good to hear somebody at least getting aware of it. It's really a shame because it hurts people like blacks because a lot of the statistics about, like, for example, in school expulsions and detentions and things like that, they compare the number of expulsions for blacks against this other number, which includes Latinos, which is, really intermediate between whites and blacks. So because people don't separate out Latinos, they don't realize that the situation is much, much worse than it appears to be. But anyway, that's my own personal issue. I had a question. On December 6th, the Associated Press reported about a man in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, a guy called Richard Humphreys, who said at a bar, and the bartender reported him to the police, that he said something that God might speak to the world through a burning bush, and that was enough.
He did that once, supposedly, right?
Right. When the president was going to visit in Sioux Falls in March 2001, and he was sentenced this last month to more than 3 years in prison for that. And I was just wondering if you knew if there were any kind of anything beyond these bare facts that might have caused that, or was it just...
No, I think that's probably exactly what happened. I know of another case where a guy in North Carolina, a art dealer, was in line to fly to Germany for a art convention, and he was standing in the security line, and there were a couple of... sort of loud guys up ahead of him who were making comments about the policies of the Bush administration, and he, being about 10 people back, said loudly to them to join in their conversations, "Yeah, Bush is as dumb as a rock." And the security guards called the Secret Service in North Carolina. They held this guy till the Secret Service sent two people over who took him into a room and interrogated him about his beliefs, found out he was a Green Party member, and interrogated him about his green politics. He missed his flight, and then they banned him from taking any airplanes. He can't fly now.
And you just wrote a piece while we're on this, before we go to the next caller, Dave, on the no-fly list. And what, tell our listeners what this no-fly list is all about.
Well, this is a good example of what's going on. One of the other panicky moves that was created after 9/11 was they created a new agency called the Transportation Security Administration, which has a it runs all those people in the white shirts that search you at the airport. It also operates a list of people that it considers to be threats to aviation who aren't allowed to get on planes. And beyond that, it appears to have a second list of people who get harassed and searched every time they try to get on a plane. I talked to a woman who is a 74-year-old nun from Milwaukee.
That spells trouble.
Yeah, right. You know, there's a profile of a terrorist and so on. And she was stopped from flying to Washington to lobby her Congress people from Minnesota, from Wisconsin, about the arms aid to Colombia. And she simply was stopped because she was from a Catholic peace organization, and she was harassed and missed her flight. There's this guy in North Carolina. There's a lot of people who are clearly not terrorists who are being harassed and stopped from flying. There's another Jesuit priest in Arizona I talked to who said that since 9/11 he's in a peace organization, Catholic peace organization, and he said every single time he flies he's singled out to be searched and harassed at the gate. So and he's been told he's on a list.
Well, we're talking to Dave Lindorf today, the freelance journalist and expert on civil liberties, our guest on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We do have a couple lines open. I'm going to go back to the phones in a second, but if you'd like to call up, the number is 333-9455, the toll-free number 800-222-9455. And let's go to a toll-free line right now. Chicago, you're on the air with Dave Lindorf.
Hi, thanks for another fine program. I'd like to ask Mr. Lindorf, basically, I'll give two examples while you're thinking about this question. Is there anything that you can name that the public does not have a right to information about, just to go to the library at public expense, not to have to pay extra for it, and find out what they would like to know? My two examples are about 8 years ago, Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton got rid of the Office of Technology Assessment that used to evaluate and produce a lot of information for us. Last Friday on Now with Bill Moyers, a daughter of Illinois, Sandra Steingraber from Pekin, who's written and spoken on environmental toxins, talked about the right to know what is contaminating our environment that might affect both the born and the yet unborn. Why do they have the right to put out toxins without telling us, without testing them? And don't we have the right to know? Are there still community right to know laws? What do they have the right and the duty to withhold? It's probably a very small quantity of information. Don't we have the right to all the rest?
Well, this is a good question. It all is of a piece, but this administration in particular has been gutting public access to information. Again, you know, after COINTELPRO, there were some freedom of information laws which were passed, which were very dramatic and opened up government tremendously. And one of the things that Ashcroft did when he came in was he issued a directive to all government agencies reversing 30 years of freedom of information precedent. The government standard prior to Ashcroft was that government agencies were to release any and all information that there wasn't a specific legal reason why they should keep. And Ashcroft turned that on its head and said that government agencies should only release that information which they were legally obligated to release. So it's a 180-degree turnaround.
You know, I hear you say this, Dave Lindorf, and I'm just so astounded because I hear politicians like Ashcroft, when he was a senator from Missouri, often and loudly talk about how important it was to get government off the backs of people and how suspicious we should be of the public sector and government, and how extolling the wondrousness of the private sectors and private citizens and private initiative. Yet here then this is core way that people can stay on top of what their government's doing. He's trying to make it impossible for you to know about.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it seems, you know, contradictory to put it mildly.
Well, you know the old phrase about power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I don't think it's that strange that people come into power and decide that they know what's right for everybody else, and then they will proceed to go against all their earlier principles from when they were on the outs.
You know, before we get to the next caller, and we've got someone that's been very patient, I would like you to just give a brief rundown on the TIPS program, because we haven't spoken about it yet, and you just wrote a fine article on it recently.
Okay. I'd like to get a chance to say a little about the Mumia Abuja.
That's coming up next. We'll get to that, too.
Yeah, the TIPS program is another illustration of the mindset of this administration. What they did is last February, they came up with this idea that great idea to fight terrorism was to enlist the American public as spies in their neighborhood on their neighbors, because, you know, who knows better what strange things go on in your neighborhood than you? And so they were going to encourage millions and millions of people to become freelance spies for the government. So I just signed up for it to see what they were doing. And, you know, I waited around to get my decoder ring, and it never came. So I finally just called them up and said, hey, I'm a volunteer in the TIPS program, and I'd like to know who do I call with my tips about my suspicious neighbors. And the woman at the Ashcroft's office said, oh, well, we've set up a 800 number with the FBI for you to call. So she gave it to me, and I called it. And this pert young woman answered and said, America's Most Wanted. And it turned out that they hadn't really set the program up officially yet, and so they were turning the calls over to Fox TV.
And what is the status of the program today?
It's sort of in limbo, because Dick Armey, who I mentioned before, when he was the majority party whip in the House, thought this program was a terrible idea, reminiscent of the Stasi in East Germany, and so he attacked
the notorious secret police there.
Right, that was where every other person in East Germany was a spy.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty much the model for the Ashcroft program, I think. So anyway, Armey attached a measure to the bill that he was shepherding through the House that said that no government money could be used to establish a program for Americans spying on Americans, and that was pretty definitive. And that was where Lieberman in the Senate, who was shepherding the Senate version of the bill, wasn't supporting that. I think, you know, the articles about the horrors of the TIP program kind of forced him to back off of his blanket support for it. And it's unclear where it is now, because it was the Homeland Security bill passed, and I think it passed with Dick Armey's prohibition. But Ashcroft has been pursuing it in different ways, so that now they have this Citizens Corps program, and what they're doing is they're having the sort of mini TIPS program being set up within communities by local police departments. There was an article about the one around here being done in the Philly Inquirer.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to check out your local community and see what the local police are doing. It could be that they're setting up your neighbor to spy on you.
Well, we'll check into that and maybe do a show on it. Let's go back to the phone lines if we can. Line 3, Champagne, you're on the air with Dave Lindorf.
Yeah, my question is rather amorphous, but I'm just wondering about, you know, the fact that the American people are pretty much indifferent to all of this, maybe out of fear and, you know, the confidence that, you know, everybody will take care of things, the big guys will take care of us, and we need protection. But, or maybe it's totally, and then there may be another group of people that are just in despair to the point where they feel there's nothing that they can do. I have to fight that one. But, for example, I mean, I'm wondering, I have been away from the high schools and the grade schools for quite many years. I mean, are students, are they learning about democracy and maybe the role of the media in democracy, or what our rights might be? I mean, it seems that people basically are pretty much unaware.
I think they're learning the opposite. I mean, the student newspapers are being edited and banned, and for taking any kind of stand. Students are being drug tested. They're learning that it's okay to, you know, violate their personal space and bodies to test them for, you know, I mean, when my daughter was in high school, she couldn't bring an aspirin to school. It's nuts. We're teaching our kids that it's okay to monitor everything you do. So I would say the opposite is being done. Kids are being, it's being inculcated in you that Big Brother has a right to.
Perhaps it's just leading to a certain kind of depression or passivity.
Passivity, yeah, I would say.
Yeah, well, thank you, caller. Dave, there was another caller who called up who had a similar question but had a bad phone line, so she sort of asked us to broach it with you, which is, you know, what do we do about this? I mean, if you're concerned about the decline of civil liberties, the attack on civil liberties, if you think this is a fundamental issue, what steps can people take?
I think that people have to take steps at every level. You got it. First of all, we got to start voting, and we got to start voting in our own interest and stop looking at the TV ads. And then second of all, you need to get out there and talk with your neighbors and say, you know, what's going on here. And third of all, get involved in your community. I wrote a piece about how there's actually a movement sweeping the country of communities passing Bill of Rights Protection Acts within their own jurisdictions.
Yeah, they're up to a few dozen now, aren't they?
It's over 20 now, and there's about 50 or 60 other communities, some of them big, like Denver, Colorado, and I think it's being considered in Milwaukee, and I think they're considering one in the New York City Council,
mm-hmm.
Oakland. A lot of major cities are passing these things, and they have teeth. They're saying that the local police should not participate in violating citizens' rights under the USA Patriot Act, and that's pretty significant. And eventually, if enough communities do that, it's going to send a message to Congress that says, we don't like this stuff, and maybe they'll have the guts to stand up and throw out the USA Patriot Act.
You know, Dave, you wrote a very highly acclaimed book, Killing Time, an investigation into the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. It's gotten, you know, a lot of acclaim. Could you talk a little bit about that book before we go? Because I know that it isn't right on the topic of TIPS and the Patriot Act, but it really gets to some fundamental issues of civil liberties and social justice.
Well, it definitely gets to the habeas corpus issue and the fairness of our judicial system. I mean, Mumia Abu-Jamal is a guy who spent 21 years in solitary confinement in death row in Pennsylvania for the killing of a white cop in 1981. And I did a three-year investigation into this case and came to the conclusion that he almost certainly did not commit first-degree murder. And it's a complex case, but he also certainly didn't get a fair trial. I mean, he had a judge that had sent 31 people to death row, 29 of them black. He had it in for this guy. You can see it all through the transcript. You had a prosecutor who used every trick in the book, and some of them, I think, over the top in terms of legality, to get this guy convicted. I mean, they read the jury a quote that he made of Mao Zedong saying, power flows from the barrel of the gun. That quote had been made by him when he was 15 years old, and this was 12 years later, and they read that to the jury. So for what you say when you're 15, you can be hung out to dry.
No.
This is a terrible case, and yet the federal judge that reviewed his case last December, a year ago, felt constrained by the act I told you about that passed in the Clinton administration, that he couldn't overrule the judge's decision on all these horrible facts. So the book really details how this guy was railroaded to death row. It's pretty close to, I think, a lynching.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have called it, and I would support that.
Where does the case stand?
Trial.
Where does the case stand right now, Dave?
It's going before the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, and I don't know what the likelihood of his getting a new trial is. If he loses at the Third Circuit, then of course it goes to the Supreme Court, where his fate is not in good hands. I would say on the Supreme Court's position on death penalty is pretty supportive. I mean, they're going around the edges of it, nibbling away at the worst features of it, mainly because they do support the death penalty and they want to get rid of the most egregious abuses of it so that they can retain the death penalty.
Now, so if he loses at the Third Circuit, there's a chance he could be executed. There's still a definite chance he will be executed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's sort of headed that way.
Now, he switched legal teams at a certain point in the last few years, didn't he?
Yes, about a year and a half ago.
And could you give us the background on that? What was the basis of that, to your knowledge?
One of his attorneys, his sort of second attorney under Len Wineglass, very famous progressive anti-death penalty attorney, the attorney under him wrote a book about the case, sort of an insider's account of the case, in which he said some things that revealed some inner workings of the defense strategy and stuff. And so Jamal got ticked off and fired him for that, probably with good justification. But he also fired Wineglass, which I think was not wise. He was angry that Wineglass hadn't stopped the book, hadn't monitored what was being written. And I think Wineglass probably stands guilty of having trusted this guy not to do what he did. But I think it was a bad move at that point in the case for Jamal to have lost it and fired an attorney like Wineglass. He hired two attorneys, one from Chicago, Marlene Kamish, and one from California named Elliot Grossman, neither of whom has any significant death penalty experience. I think Marlene handled one death penalty case, Manuel Salazar, young guy who had killed a cop in Joliet. But she'd actually been taken off the case by the public defender's office for screwing it up. So that's the extent of the death penalty experience that Abu Jamal has on his team right now.
So these guys might be really great lawyers, but they don't have the experience of a Wineglass.
Definitely not. And death penalty is a very arcane, special area of the law where any mistake that you make can be fatal. So.
Yeah, that's like there's no net beneath you of that one.
Yeah, that's right. So he really should have, if you don't have the best that you can get at this point, you're really in tough shape. I think they're now trying to hire someone on from San Francisco who's pretty skilled, and so it may be that they'll end up with somebody good in the end, but this last year has been wasted in terms of, the kind of legal talent that's been going on.
David Lindorf, I hear the band tuning up in the background, which means it's time for me to get out of the studio. David Lindorf is the author of Killing Time, an investigation into the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. So you can check that book out if you want to get up to speed on the Abu-Jamal case. He's also an expert on civil liberties. Look for his stuff in The Nation, in These Times, Business Week, and Salon. On TIPS and on the Patriot Act and the other secret proceedings going on right now in these United States. Dave, thank you very much for being our guest today.
Thanks for having me on.
Been a pleasure. And I'd like to thank Ben Scott, my wonderful producer, for helping arrange the show. Join us 1 week from today when I, Bob McChesney, will host Media Matters and our guest will be David Barsamian. Thank you very much.